You are listening to KBOO Portland. Good evening. For your weather tonight, we're looking at 100% chance of rain and a low of 47. Tomorrow, 60% chance of showers, likely high of 59. And then tomorrow night, a 30% chance of rain with a low of 44. So no surprises there. Coming up next, we have Treasures from the KBOO Archives.
I'm Brian DeShazer, director of the Pacifica Radio Archives, and welcome to From the Vault, the Pacifica Radio Archives weekly program that brings our history out of the vault and onto the radio. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. had a dream, and it had at least two phases. The first was defined by his well-known leadership in the nonviolent civil rights movement aimed at ending discrimination against African Americans and segregation. The second phase was Dr. King's vision to fight an injustice that had no racial divide. Poverty in America. In 1968, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, led by Dr. King, was planning the Poor People's March on Washington, D.C., as part of the War on Poverty. Dr. Martin Luther King made sure that the Poor People's Campaign did not focus just on poor African Americans, but included poverty-stricken people without deference to race, creed, or color. Mexicans, Puerto Ricans, Asians, Native Americans, and Caucasians, particularly from rural Appalachia, were recruited to join in the campaign. He planned to lobby Congress for an economic bill of rights, which would include affordable housing and a guaranteed annual income for the poor of this country.
Every child, every individual in this land ought to have plenty to eat. And as you could imagine yourself sitting at the breakfast table this morning, you have enough to eat. What about your neighbor? What about your little kindred, or those in your community, or in your state, or in your city? They're hungry. They go to bed without anything to eat, and here you are enjoying the fat of the land and still yet depriving your neighbors. And as I look at this march, the Poor People's Campaign here in Washington, I want to tell you this. Every footstep that these citizens that's going to take, that's the cry of a hungry child in your neighborhood.
Dr. King would not live to see the march, but thanks to the efforts of the Reverend Ralph Abernathy, who took over the leadership role of the SCLC, and others such as Jesse Jackson, Cesar Chavez, and Dolores Huerta, poor people from around the country began their trip to Washington, D.C. by bus, car, mule train, ox cart, and any other way they could manage. For most of the people, it was a great sacrifice, but a necessary burden to carry their message to Washington. Some of this journey was recorded by Pacifica producer Arthur Alexander along the road from Memphis, Tennessee, to our nation's capital.
Bob, we're 3 hours out of Washington now, so how do you feel?
Well, I feel great. I feel better than I ever felt before. I think I feel almost like King. He's going up on the mountain. It seems like I'm going up there. I'm going to look over the promised land. I'm going to stay there.
How long are you ready to stay for?
How long I'm ready to stay? I'm not sure. I'll stay there until everything is settled. If it takes a lifetime, I'll be there.
What happened to your job in Memphis?
I quit my job.
Why?
I quit my job in order to come to the Poor People March in Washington. And so I decided, well, if I got that job, I'd get another one.
You went down from Memphis to Marks, right?
Yes,
sir. Right. What do you think about Marks?
Well, like they said, Marks, I found that Marks is the poorest little small town in the nation. It is very poor. Some of the houses down there are really not fitting for animals to live in, not let alone human beings. And people down there starving. And we have seen several cases of kids suffering from malnutrition, and it's just awful. They make you almost sick just to look at the way the situation is down there. And I talked to a lady when I was down tomorrow. She was receiving, she had been receiving welfare, but she was cut off, and she had 8 kids, and she was getting $15 a month. She had to pay her rent for her home, plus utility bill, plus she had to buy food and clothing. And after her son came down from Chicago, and he fixed up her home and everything, well, they decided to cut her off because they said, well, you got your house fixed up and painted and everything, so you don't need the welfare. We'll get this money to somebody else. And so they cut her off, and so she's back in the same hole she was in before she started.
Dream. This is life. If you have seen the things that I've seen since I've left Memphis, through Salem, through Nashville, through Virginia, through North Carolina, through Charlotte, and all the way up to Washington, you've experienced something I believe was the greatest experience that I've ever experienced in my life. And I'm just 33 years old, young man. But I feel like I'm 80. I've learned so much.
It's your time.
I learned a lot about my people.
One day, at least I hope and I pray this would happen, that I would be free. I mean, when I said free, would I walk down the streets or anywhere else I want to with white girls, white boys, just like they just my friends, you know, what I'm raised up with and like that. Go out with them, eat with them, play. I mean, just this. I mean, all, in other words, everybody just be one big family. Because once it's one big family, I believe it could be more happiness.
You know, I'm going to tell you something. You know, the white people in this country supposedly have the money, and they do have the money. Uh-huh. And they suppose they got the education and the good jobs, and they do have the education and the good jobs, and they do have the breaks, and they do get most of the breaks. And they're miserable also, you know, and you try to find the reason. And it's funny, but very often you'll read or you'll hear of something said, which you don't really know it's, you know, it sounds good. It sounds like a good theory, great philosophy, and you keep it in the back of your mind, and you don't really know it until at some instant it's suddenly proven to you. And this old saying that as long as one man is a slave, I'm not free.
I know it's impossible for all white, it's impossible for all Negroes to get all that sickness and hatred out of their mind, but if just the majority can get it out of their mind, and we get together, the other, the few, the minor part of each Negro race, and the white race, they automatically gonna, you know, just flunk on in with the rest of them. You can't beat them, John, you know? So that would automatically happen. But if they don't, the way this country, the way the issue's going now, it's racial, it can easily in the future turn into a North Vietnam. I mean, I'm not going by no, I believe in it. I mean, even a blind man can see that. You know what I mean? Because they can't. What they gonna do? Take all the Negroes and shoot them up, put them on concentration camp or something? They can't stand UN criticisms about that. They wouldn't do that. And they know if they tried to do that, all the countries gonna support the Negroes and give them arms to fight with. But that's just like in North Vietnam. North Vietnam don't have nothing to fight with. If Russia, China wasn't supporting them, the United States been and wiped them out. But they can't. How can they erase them when Russia give them everything that the United States got to fight with? So once this here country ever turned into a revolution, it's over with. The United States gone. I'm going to tell you a true fact, what I compare the United States with. I compare it with Rome. I believe if it ever falls, it's going to fall like Rome.
A lot of people did.
You know what? Because when, in Rome's time, it wasn't a country in the world that could overtake it. You know what happened? The people overtaking the government. See, once the people overtake the government, the country don't no longer have no source of power. It's just over with. It's just over with. I would hate for that to happen because a lot of innocent people would get killed, a lot of blood stains all over the streets just for nothing. Just because a white face brother said, I don't want to be with a black person. They ask those black people if some got tails or something. I mean, all those human beings. No different, we're just human beings. What do you mean? All those human beings. So really, if you really take a good thought at this, now, it's really just a whole big old silly. It's just silly. Just silly. I believe most of about the white people is hurting more their pride than anything. A lot of them is hurting pride. It's just, that's my opinion. I believe they're hurting a lot of their pride. So if they let a lot of those old comrades, old senators, persuade them not to get these people what they want, they're fools. Because even a blind man can see what's going on here.
What bus are you on? Bus number?
Number 8.
What's your last name?
Tula. My last name, Tula.
T-U-L-L-E-R.
T-I-L-L-E-R.
Your first name?
Johnny Gilwaken.
Your middle name? You have a middle
Nelson.
Name?
No, we didn't.
What's your address?
823 Sims Street.
Sims Street?
Sims Street.
Yes, I am at.
Yes.
What was that instruction we just got? What city or town?
Marks,
Mississippi?
Mississippi.
How old are you?
68.
No, you have no relatives with you on the march?
Not, no.
All right, okay. What is your occupation?
I'm picking cotton, chopping cotton.
Do you have any other special skills? Are you good at working with wood or?
No.
All right, now, we have to reach someone in Marks about you. Who do we contact?
I got a sister-in-law there, 726 3rd Street, Mark.
What's her name?
Dee Bell.
What's her first name?
Dee.
Dee. Last name is Bell?
Bell.
Mr. Tiller, you're 68 years old. Why did you come up here from Marks, Mississippi? It's been a very rough trip. How long are you going to stay?
I'm going to stay till we get straight. Get it straightened out.
Would you tell me why you came up here?
I came up here to get more, because they're not paying us nothing down there for work.
Well, you're 68 years old now, right? Yeah. Do you still work?
Yes, I work. I still
work?
Yes, I
and
wait.
You pick cotton?
I pick cotton and chop cotton.
How much do you earn?
Well, we don't get to $3 a day.
How many hours do you work a day?
We work 10.
What about the housing conditions down there, the medical conditions?
The house, we ain't got no house. We just got a piece of house. Windows out, everything. Water down there under the house. And so we just staying there, making out.
Do you have any special message you'd like to tell to other people who, certainly a lot of people are a lot younger than you are, about coming down here to Washington?
Well, I have talked to some of them to come down here, but I couldn't get them to come with me down here.
You think it's important?
Yes, and I think it's important to come. I tell you one thing, I was on the welfare. I worked, stayed on it 2 months and they cut me off because I was getting $40.20 and they said I didn't need no more. They cut me off from it.
Mr. Taylor, let me ask you, what does the word America mean to you?
Word America, word America means a lot to us. I know that. You know, that's the word I know about America. And that's all I know what to say about it.
Yes, it is hard picking cotton every day, especially for someone his age. You know, bending over in a cotton field 10 hours a day just for $3 isn't worth it. Sometimes you have to pick 5 and 6 rolls of cotton to get 100. I don't think it's worth it. All the sun is coming down on you. You have to stop and get meals. But if you stop, you won't be able to get in with the amount of cotton you want in to get the amount of money that you want. It's not worth it.
Nervous, excited?
I feel very excited, but I'm not nervous at all. I'm really really want to hear up and make a rap. You know, want to see what the excitement is going to be.
Where do you come from? You come from Memphis?
Yeah, I mean, right now I live in Memphis, but my original home is Fayette County, Tennessee, where Tin City was first built when all the Negroes had to move out to white people's farm and live in tents for their home. So that's where I live. That's where I'm from, Fayette County, Tennessee, really.
What do you do now?
For me? Well, I was working until the strike, the sanitary strike came up in Memphis, and I quit, started participating in the demonstration and the picket line. So, I mean, every year when it's a demonstration or something come up, I always quit.
Once in Washington, D.C., an encampment was constructed on the Washington Mall dubbed Resurrection City. This was used as a base camp for strategy meetings, teach-ins, and speeches.
My name's Clifton Hill, and I'm the chairman of the Creek Centralization Committee of Oklahoma. And my membership of my tribal organization rates about 39,961. We are a part of this country. That's the reason. We have came to Washington past 150 years wanting our grievance heard, and many of our lands and our money has been dissipated by the government. And we have pleaded, we have came, we have spent money that the government, the senators, and the Congress would send present a legislation that would be helpful to our people, but every legislation that they had ever made has been detrimental to our tribe. Under the treaties, the government has broken more than 863 treaties with my people in the United States. And we're not here merely to ask a handout, or we're not here to, what you might say, ask or plead for the aid of our people, but only thing we're asking, justice that would be done to the people in America. The Great Spirit has created all people equally, and as I could see, this don't have to take place. People don't have to march, they don't have to beg, because this is a Mother Earth that produces food and produces animals. And the government has made merchandise of this land, of the livestock which the Creator has put upon this earth. And therefore, people shouldn't go hungry. Every child, every individual in this land ought to have plenty to eat. And as you could imagine yourself sitting at the breakfast table this morning, you have enough to eat. What about your neighbor? What about your little kindred, are those in your community, are in your state, are in your city? They're hungry. They go to bed without anything to eat, and here you are enjoying the fat of the land, and still yet depriving your neighbors, and you're depriving. And as I look at this march, the Poor People's Campaign here in Washington, I want to tell you this: every footstep that these citizens that's going to take, that's the cry of a hungry child in your neighborhood. That's a hungry child that every step in the heartbeat that will walk the streets of Washington, the state, the capital in the United States, that will be announcing the hungry. Every citizen of the United States ought to participate and tell the world that we do have hunger in our ghettos, and not only in our ghettos, or on our reservations, not only in our reservations, but throughout our metropolitan areas. I'm here that we might be somewhat help to the world problem, that this world problem is not going to come to an end until we, as a government of the people of the United States, we become to be humble and to hear the voice of the Great Spirit and beginning to share instead of being greedy. Greedy and selfishness in the eyes of the government has hurt the entire world of the world. Today, that's the reason we're having violence. You are causing the violence because you are greedy, selfish government. Unless we break There is enough groceries, there's enough food in the world where people don't have to walk. They don't have to cause violence, but because of you being greedy and selfish, and that you have closed the door on the hungry, today the footsteps of these people that will walk the streets, are sounding the cry of our infants, the elders. Today, many of them on welfare. That is a shame. When we have to put people on welfare, I'm going to tell you, man, when this country is so rich and so what you might say, so abundant, and still yet people have to go hungry, I want to tell you, you as American citizens, you are causing this violence. You are the one that's erupting this country, because you are the cause of this entire world to get hungry, because you are selfish, greedy. You are closing the door on the hungry. And this war, this political war that's been began since the World War I and World War II and the war in Vietnam, it's just only a political war. And we're saying that we're fighting for our country. No, we're fighting for the big people, because they want to create more money. And the poor people have to go out and fight to make other people rich. And that is the reason we as American people, we're saying that we shouldn't fight just cause to make other people rich. We should fight to keep people from being hungry. We ought to share everything that we have in this country, not to monopolize on the poor people. And that is the voice of the Great Spirit that is speaking to every heart.
I'm talking to Richard Romero, who is the liaison at SCLC between the Washington office and the Western groups. Mr. Romero is a Mexican-American who lives in Denver, and he works for the Crusade of Justice. Mr. Romero, what do you expect SCLC to accomplish? And if it doesn't accomplish this purpose, what do you envision for the future?
Well, the reason we got together with SCLC is because all the problems encountered by all poor people are basically the same problems. We felt that this was a good time to come to Washington so the Mexican-American could get national recognition. One thing I have discovered in the East Coast is that hardly anyone knows of the problems that are encountered by the Mexican-American in the Southwest. As everyone knows, this is a nonviolent demonstration that we will have in Washington. This will be the last time the Mexican-Americans will come to Washington. We expect to have results from this, and if not, we will just go home and go about our business. We will never come back to Washington again. We are fed up with begging and asking, pleading with the administration to do something about our problems. I think if nothing comes of this, if nothing is done here in Washington, then we will just go home and resort to other methods. Some of our people who will be coming to Washington will be better off here in Washington, getting three meals a day and a place to stay. As far as some of the economic conditions of the Southwest, for example, in Taos County, New Mexico, the average family income is something like $636 a year per annually. Texas is very bad as far as economics go. The farm workers in Texas, the biggest majority of the Mexican Americans are farm workers in Texas, and their pay scale ranges from 60 cents an hour to probably a dollar an hour. The conditions in which the Mexican Americans in Texas live are really deplorable, whereas in the west side of San Antonio, Texas, there are 250,000 Mexican Americans living in the west side of San Antonio, with shacks and huts for places to live made out of cardboard and orange crates. And with no running water, no outside toilets, even they have a trough where they store their water out in their front or backyard. It is like going to another world when you go to Texas and see the conditions in which the Mexican-American live. All parts, majority of Texas has beautiful big new highways separating the Mexican-American community from the beautiful cities, for example, in San Antonio and El Paso. We don't feel that money is the solution to solving all the problems. Money is an essential thing that we must have. We must have an economic base in this country. But we feel that in order for our people to better themselves, the philosophy of the Crusade for Justice, headed by Rodolfo Corky Gonzalez, is that we have to instill pride in our people. They have to be proud of who they are. They have to know about their culture and their heritage. They have to know about the contributions that their people made to help build this society. For example, the mining industry was started by our people. The cattle industry was started by our people. The agricultural industry was started by our people in the Southwest. And when you speak about American history and you relate to the Plymouth Rock and Jamestown, what you're losing out there is that 50 to 60 years before that, the Spaniards had five colonies set up in the interior of this country in the Southwest. They had an educational system going. They had a form of government system going. So what we are really lacking in the educational system is our history. It is not taught in the schools. Therefore, we feel that our children have nothing to identify with in the educational system, in that you cannot identify with George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Thomas Jefferson, but you could identify with your own people. I feel that the children now in the schools, in the educational system, feel that to identify with being a Mexican is a failure. And the success symbols that are taught in the educational system are an Anglo figure and the dollar. It doesn't matter if you're a cheat, a hypocrite, or a liar. As long as you have that dollar, you are a successful person in this society. Also, they say about assimilating into this society. They ask us to assimilate into this society and say that, and they tell us that we have to give up the values that we feel that are very important to us, our culture, our language, our food, our music, to become a part of this society. And I feel that if this society is so good, why are 8 million of your own people, Anglos who are hippies, rejecting this society? And I also feel that in order for the Washington March to be successful, it would have to be a nonviolent thing. Now, the white American society keeps asking if there is going to be any violence on this march. All the people that are participating in this march have already pledged themselves to nonviolence. I think this is really one of the hang-ups of white American society. They're always talking violence when the people have already pledged themselves to nonviolence. We are coming here in a peaceful demonstration. We want our demands to be heard, and this is the reason for coming. There will be no violence in Washington as far as I'm concerned.
On May 13th, the first Sojourners arrived at Resurrection City. Pacifica producer Ellen Cohn was there to record the events as they unfolded.
On Wednesday morning, May 22nd, I went to the Resurrection Lutheran Church in Arlington, Virginia, to have breakfast with a group of teenage boys, aged 17 to 19, who had been staying at the church since Sunday night. As part of the Southern Caravan of the Poor People's Campaign, they had been staying at various places in Northern Virginia while shanties in Resurrection City were being built to house them. Meals for the boys were prepared by members of the congregation and served in a comfortable dining hall with the added nicety of fresh flowers on each table. During the day, they met with their group leader for workshops and nonviolence. They watched television, played checkers, attended to a cleanup detail, went swimming at a local Y, and tried to fill the time until the Wednesday morning march into Resurrection City. On Tuesday night, they went to a dance at a nearby church. Sleeping quarters at Resurrection Lutheran were in the church auditorium, where air mattresses and blankets had been provided. After breakfast, I talked with some of the boys as they waited for transportation to the site where the Southern Caravan would begin its march.
My name is Birmingham, Alabama. I'm 18 years of age. It started on Wednesday the 8th. On the caravan, it came through Birmingham, and me and a lot of my friends, we was listening to radio the same day we joined, and we were just sitting around the house. So we decided to go to join the caravan. And we found it was very interesting. We had some hard times along the way, sleeping on floors. A lot of times you didn't get, but you had to understand that everybody had their problems. Mm-hmm. And not getting enough rest at night. Because mm-hmm. they had a rally just about every night. Every city we stopped in, we had a rally. And it wasn't over till about 12 o'clock at night. By the time you got your housing, it was about 12 or 1 o'clock at night. You had to get up about 7 o'clock in the morning, come back to wherever you was last night to get ready to move out the next day.
Are you in school? Are you through with school?
I'm finished school.
What happens after the campaign? What are your plans?
Well, I was thinking about working with SCLC.
Back home or up in Washington?
Back home.
My name is Eldridge Lee. I'm from Birmingham, Alabama. I'm 18 years of age. Well, some of the experience I had on the trip was really I caught a hard time because I wasn't used to sleeping on the floors and you didn't hardly get enough rest. Say, for instance, we go to bed about 2 o'clock and we have to be up about 8 o'clock getting ready to move on to another town. And it was really difficult for me to get used to going to bed this late and getting up early in the morning.
What have the days been like?
Well, on the bus, we really didn't have time to do anything because most of the day we just ride. So.
How long do you think you're going to be staying in Washington?
Well, I'll definitely be to Washington until about the 1st of June because I have to leave the 1st of June.
Where are you going then?
Oh, I have some private business that I have to sell back in Birmingham.
What do you think living out there is going to be like?
Well, if living out there would help, say, for instance, my children and my grandchildren, if living out there would bring them up to where they can get a job regardless of their color, I believe I'd rather stay. I'd like to stay out there. You know? Really would.
My name is Louis Kim, Charleston, South Carolina. Well, when I first saw the group marching down the street, you know, I thought it was crazy. So I went to a rally that night, and I listened, and I asked questions, and I really wanted to see what it was all about, you know, if it really was necessary. And when I traveled for 2 days, I said to myself, it's necessary, I'm going to stick with it. If it takes the rest of my life.
My name is Charles Carter. I'm from Birmingham, Alabama, 18 years old. This reverend at a barber shop, he told me about the march. He asked me, did I want to take part? I told him, yeah. And so when the caravan came to Birmingham, I joined from there.
And how long do you expect to stay?
Indefinite.
My name is Rudolph Jones. I'm from Birmingham, Alabama. I'm 19 years old. I've been with the caravan ever since Wednesday, the 8th of May. I'm a marshal on the caravan. I help the people in loading the buses, trying to keep the people straight on the buses. I find it a very nice job in a way it's a difficult job. but I like it. I like helping the people. And what I think about the caravan is, so far it's been nice. I have to understand that we don't have the sleeping qualities or the things we need, but we have to go along with this. We know this from the beginning, that it wouldn't be easy. So I would like for the peoples and those on the caravan to understand this. We know that we wouldn't find it easy. Most of the time, the peoples realize these things, but they don't try to understand them.
As a marshal, how many people are you in charge of?
Well, I have about 36 on a bus. Mm-hmm.
Is there one marshal to each busload?
Oh, well, I'm the bus leader. I have four marshals on there, one assistant, helping out on the bus.
And have just been these boys on the bus? Who else has been on the bus?
Well,
different age groups?
Different age groups. We have older people. We split up right now here, but we have about 20 older people and the young teenagers I'm here with now. Spread on the bus.
And how long do you expect to stay at the site?
Well, I have to go on the service on the 4th. I'll probably be up there to about the 28th, something like that. But
and then go back and?
Going back to Birmingham.
My name is Louis Campbell. I'm from Charleston, South Carolina, and I'm 18 years of age. And I'd like to say that I'm glad that I'm joining up on this march. Nobody made me join, and that I'm real happy to be here with all these nice people. I made a lot of new friends.
How did you get involved in the campaign? How did you hear about it?
My preacher told me. I said, told me all about it. How the situation was. So I decided to go see for myself. And the more I saw, the more I disliked, and the more I wanted to go to Washington.
Mm-hmm. How long are you going to be staying in Washington?
Until it's over, I guess.
Are you through with school?
No, ma'am, I have one more year.
So that, but you don't have to be back until September, is that right?
August the 20th.
Is that when the term starts?
No, football practice starts.
As part of the opening ceremonies, the new president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, the Reverend Ralph Abernathy, now dubbed mayor of Resurrection City, delivered the following address.
Thank you very kindly, Reverend Bevel, and to my brothers and sisters. As the mayor of this city, Resurrection City, I want to extend a very warm and hearty welcome to each of you from the South. We had a town meeting the other night, and I was elected the mayor of the city. You have come in. I want to know, are there any objections? Is it all right for me to be the mayor? USA, Resurrection City, USA. Now there are one or two things I want to do today in this welcome. Number one, I want to thank the people from Virginia who have kept, who have housed, and who have fed my people from the South. Black, white, brown, and yellow. Poor people for the last several days, and who have brought them today into our city. Now, I can talk to you because we speak the same language. And we come up out of the same trials and tribulations. You are from Mississippi. And I launched this march over in Mississippi. You remember that when that march, Eastland and steadiness. And for the first time in history, I lay peacefully. And I lay steadiness. These were two old mules that were named Eastern and Stennis down in Mississippi. You are from Alabama. And I am from Alabama. And we know about the problem. You and I know about the problem of Alabama. You are from Georgia, and you and I know about Georgia. You are from North Carolina and South Carolina, and we know about these things. And you are from Virginia, and we know that even though people live in Virginia, the state of aristocracy,
we're sick and tired of living on $38. That's public welfare down in Mississippi. We're sick and tired of living on $65 down in Alabama. While so many of the welfare white people in this country go to Europe once and twice a month. While they go over there four and five times a year, take a vacation down in the Bahamas, and then move on down to Puerto Rico. And yet we don't have the necessities of life. We have come to Washington for jobs, and we have decided that we are going to stay here until we get those jobs. Now, you know I'm a record man, and you know they've tried to make me over again. But I just have to be what I am. And I just have to tell it just like it is. Now, we had a hard time getting up here. We struggled to get buses to get up here. But we're not going to have a hard time getting back. We're going to stay here until the Congress sends us back. It's all right with us. As Ms. Brooks from Mississippi said, it's all right. We can stay here until we die. We're not in any hurry. And even when we die, they can bury us here on this land. Now, you have come in today, and we're expecting another big group tomorrow. We went over on Capitol Hill yesterday, and I may as well get ready for larger numbers every day. Because we will be back. Now, this little land here is not enough. You're standing on King Martin Luther King Plaza right now. You marched in on Abernathy Boulevard. And we have all of these streets that are named around here. Well, we want to make it clear that this is not enough land. And we don't need any permit from anybody. We have our permit already. We asked the Indians about it, and they told us that we could use the land. And this land belongs to my father. And there's plenty of land. And we're going to stretch out all the way up to the Washington Monument if it becomes necessary. And we want to welcome you to this city. This will be your home. Keep your shanty clean. And because it will be home, and we don't know how long you're going to stay here. Let us remember that we're going to remain nonviolent. But we are going to press aggressively and militantly toward our goal, which is jobs and to put an end to poverty and underemployment in this country. Now, we don't have to fight among ourselves. We're going to fight the common enemy, which is not here in the camp, but he's over there only here in the Congress of the United States. Let us stick together and let us stand together. Mexican Americans will soon be in here. American Indians will soon be here. Puerto Ricans will soon be here. Many of the poor whites are already here. And let us join arms in arms together. together, because the same forces that have kept the black man down all these years have kept the poor white, the American Indian, the Puerto Ricans, and the Mexican Americans down also. And we have decided that we are not going to let them ride our backs any longer, because we're going to stand up erect with our shoulders back and our heads high. May God bless you, my Southern brothers. And don't worry, Lyndon Johnson saw you coming this morning. His aides informed him that Eastman promised to keep us satisfied in the South, but we are not satisfied. So I can hear him saying, they're coming from the East, they're coming from the West, they're coming from the North, and they're coming from the South. And they're coming in numbers that no man can number. So let us stand together and remember we've got to plague Congress with plague after plague. But may we stand forever firmly until we can stop singing, "We shall overcome," and start singing that "We have overcome."
Maybe the most powerful moment of the campaign was when the Reverend Jesse Jackson led the citizens of the virtual city in his call and response anthem, "I Am Somebody."
Been economically cut off from a decent salary all of her life. She was always able to call back upon the inner resources of her soul and get strength and always confound. And everybody here who has lived through the adversities of Southern life got soul power. And when things get a little rough here, you might have to close your physical eyes because it might get a little dusty around here. But if you can close your eyes and get on your knees and let your mind's eye search your soul, that might be a power down there that can help you sustain yourself. When we go and confront Congress, we don't have military power, but we got soul power. We start talking about how we survive. We've never had economic power, but we got soul power.
All right,
we've just been voting in Alabama 2 years for political power, but we've always had soul power. And the odds tell us that we can't make it through now. But our soul power is not going to let us give up. Can I get a witness?
Yeah!
Soul power. Now, we go through a little exercise here every day in our city. I want all of you to get accustomed to. The first step in nonviolence is self-purification. We will not ask Congress to do anything for us that we will not do by ourselves. We aren't going to ask Congress to stop hating until we free ourselves of hate. We're not going to ask Congress to stop being racist until we ourselves stop being racist.
Right.
In other words, we're going to show them by example how a man ought to be. The word will become flesh and we'll stop talking love and start living. Stop talking brotherhood and be a brother. Stop talking friendship and be a friend. In other words, this is going to be a new city. Abraham said a few years ago when he left, he didn't have no roadmap, you know. He was just like us. And went toward a city whose foundations were not laid by slaves, but a foundation that was laid by the Lord. And the ruler and maker was God. And that's what's going to rule this city. Now, Lyndon Johnson ain't going to make no basic decisions in the resurrection city. No. All that we're saying is that the dreamer may be dead, but the dream is still alive. And anybody who's here today ought to be living in the resurrection and in the wake of Dr. King's life. That's what we're here about now. That's what we're all about here. This is a resurrection city. A new life city. We're going through a chant now that I want you to forget. Every morning when we have our worship service, we want you to think about this. I am somebody. I am God's child. I may not have a job, but I am somebody. I may be black.
I may be black.
But I am.
I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
I may not have an education. But I am.
I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
You may not respect me.
You may not respect me.
But I am.
But I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
I may be a Puerto Rican.
I may be a Puerto Rican.
But I am.
I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
I may be an Indian. And my land was stolen. But I am.
I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
I may be a Spanish American.
But I am.
Somebody.
God.
Is my father.
Is my father.
Every man.
Every man.
Is my brother.
Is my brother.
I cannot allow.
I cannot allow.
Hatred.
Hatred.
Malice.
Malice.
Racism.
Racism.
Militarism.
Militarism.
Are none of the things.
None of the things.
Separate men from God.
Separate men from God.
Keep me from knowing.
Keep me from knowing.
Every man.
Every man.
Is my brother.
Is my brother.
That's what we live by in Resurrection City.
Amen.
When you meet people in the morning, all the women are high sisters.
Yeah.
All the men are high brothers.
Yeah.
You're defined here by the content of your character and not by your background and the color of your skin. I want to say this to the brothers and the sisters that are here at the camp. Here's the situation I want to make very clear to you. We're not going to compromise on it. No, we're going to tolerate. And no one group of guys or their personal habits should be more important than the purpose for which we've come here. We're not going to tolerate any drinking of any liquor in Resurrection City.
Amen.
I just want to make that very, very clear. We're not going to tolerate too much cursing around our ladies in Resurrection City.
Amen.
Any abuse in Resurrection City from each other. This is the city of hope. Now, you might come here hating, but you ought to leave here loving. You might come here confused, but you ought to leave with direction. Sit. Just want y'all to get the rules straight, because you're not going to go much faster than you came up. The next thing is that when we go over to Capitol Hill, we're going over that nonviolent, and we're not going to compromise. Most of you don't believe in the philosophy that Dr. King really made sense out of, but I still believe it. And we're going to develop programs every day just to prove that you got two methods of solving problems in the world. White folks tried to solve problems by enslaving black people. They tried to solve the problem through violence by exterminating the Indians. They tried to destroy the personality of the Spanish Americans. They got us starving. Dr. King has another way of solving problems quite different from Johnson. Dr. King is my leader, not Johnson. And I'm going to use his philosophy. Say amen.
Amen.
The middle of June of 1968 saw the population of Resurrection City peak at 50,000 people, but after heavy rains, dampened spirits, confused agendas, and the assassination of presidential candidate Robert Kennedy, Resurrection City was closed on June 24, 1968. Although the campaign is viewed as a failure, the experience of those who took the journey and their testimony recorded and presented here is critical to the dialogue of race and poverty in America. That's it for this week's program. The recordings in today's broadcast were preserved as part of the 1968 Revolution Rewind Preservation Initiative. To listen to the complete recordings, visit our 1968 pages online at pacificaradioarchives.org. From the Vault, the series is broadcast on the Pacifica Radio Network with five stations in Berkeley, Los Angeles, New York City, Washington, D.C., Houston, Texas, and over 125 affiliates nationwide. We are now heard on the BBC Radio 5 Live, bringing the archives collection of voices to a UK audience. For more information, call the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230. From the Vault was written and produced by Brian DeShazer and Mark Torres, and executive produced by the Pacifica Radio Archives and yours truly, Brian DeShazer. From the Vault is presented as part of the Pacifica Radio Archives Preservation and Access Project, which is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts and grants from the Grammy Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the University of California, Berkeley's Moffitt Library, the Pacifica Foundation, and from contributions from Pacifica Station listeners. Our theme music is by Kevin Drum Holiday. Thanks for listening.
KBOO Portland. What do you think about this?
KBOO at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. This month, on Thursday, March 10th at 7 p.m., KBOO at the Clinton will show Salt of the Earth. Based on actual events, this film depicts a strike by Mexican-American mine workers in New Mexico. Against a backdrop of social injustice, a family drama is played out by a miner and his wife. Again, that's Salt of the Earth, Thursday, March 10th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune into KBOO on Tuesday, March 8th from midnight to midnight as we celebrate International Women's Day with 24 hours of programming produced, hosted, and engineered by women. There will be live music, public affairs with the feminist focus, and female DJs playing all kinds of music to celebrate the creativity, variety, and zeal of the women of the world. Again, that's Tuesday, March 8th, from midnight to midnight here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.